Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the SAF Holland SA conference call regarding the third quarter results 2018. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode. The floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Stefan Haas.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for joining the SAF Holland call today in what we understood is a pretty crowded publication day. Let us remark that this call follows up to the one we held already on October 19th when we released the preliminary figures and refined guidance. As usual, and you're used to that, our CEO Detlef Borkhardt and Dr. Matthias Heitner, our CFO, will take turns in presenting the slides. And with that, I would like to hand over to Detlef. Thanks.
Stefan, thanks a lot. Also, warm welcome and good morning from my side. This is Detlef Borkhardt. Thanks for dialing in for today's call. Our agenda today, and I'm already on page 2 on our presentation, covers mainly 4 points, and I will try to guide you through that. I will start with a business summary about the third quarter 2018. That will be followed by a market update. That means we are now in November 2018, and we are going to tell you where we are, where the markets are, and what to expect, what to come. That will be followed by an overview about the status and profitability trends in our different regions, from North America or the Americas, to be precise, EMEA, Asia-Pacific, and China. And that will be finalized with the group targets in sales and earnings for the full year 2018. As usually, and as Stefan said, today's presentation will be divided between Matthias and myself, and I will do the first part of it. So, having said that, I'm jumping on page number 3 in our presentation, and as you can see on the headline, we are going to confirm our preliminary numbers. You can see that in the headline, which we presented already in October 19th. In Q3 2018, our sales grew by 22.9%. And with this number, we can report, or we report, the highest Q3 sales ever on group level. And in absolute numbers, we are talking about 340.6 million euros, compared with previous year of 277.1 million. Organically, that means without our M&A activities, which are now especially from India with York, contributed to the high sales growth. Organically only, our sales grow by 15%, which is an enormous high number, and please allow me this side comment. We have been able to follow the markets, and especially in North America, which is in these days a very hot market, and I come to that later more in detail. And although with all the problems on the supply chain, with all the problems with the tight labor market, etc., etc., we have been able to grow significantly, to serve our customers, to deliver products both in the OE and also in the aftermarket. The same in Europe, also on a very high level with a stressed supply chain. So to achieve this number, and by the way, I have to mention China as well, because here we have pretty much the same issues, that we have been able to grow sales by 15% organically only. This is, from my point of view, a very nice achievement. And also in comparison with other market players on the supplier side, customer side, but also looking to our competitors, we believe we did a very, very good job in achieving this high sales number. Yeah, on the third bullet point, you see the continued burden from the increase of rating costs in relation to our U.S. plant consolidation and still the high steel prices in North America. But, and this is very important to mention at that point of time here, we see and we reported a successive profitability improvement in the Americas also in Q3 this year. That's what we promised earlier. On the fourth bullet point, you see the sales mix in U.S. First of all, it came in, total sales in U.S. came in much higher as expected in Q3, which is the positive side of the coin, the negative one, and that's usually always the case. This high sales came in with a clearly below group average margin that has to do with the product mix in these stormy days. Yeah, extraordinary income We booked 4.4 million euro extraordinary income in Q3 based on a partial settlement of a US medical plan. We will explain that later more in detail. And having said that, in Q3 2018, the group adjusted EBIT came in at 27.1 million or respectively the margin at 8%. Previous year was 7.5%. Due to the fact that we would like to be as transparent as possible, and we are always very transparent, we created something like a, call it clean adjusted EBIT margin. So we took out the 4.4 million extra as an extraordinary income. If you then do the calculation, you come up with an EBIT margin, adjusted EBIT margin of 6.7%. The net income doubled compared with last year, up to 104% to 15.3 million euros compared with 7.5 in the previous year. On the next three pages, I would like to talk about the market situation. First of all, starting as usually with the trailer market in North America. I'm on page 4 of our presentation. As you can see on the headline, we see a still very strong order intake on the trailer market in North America. Backlog for most of the trailer OEMs in US is 6 months and longer. Even the big players in the market are booked for 5 to 6 months now, which is very unusual. And when you look to the September order intake in particular, with 56,000 units, I don't know when we ever have seen 56,000 units in one single month in over the year. This is an extreme high number, which is 59% higher month over month and 133% year over year. So that means the trailer guys are now following more or less the truck side, the truck segment. And just as a reminder, at the end of last year, early this year, one of the two companies who do order forecasting for North America, in this case I'm talking about ACT, the other one very well known is FTR. ACT talked earlier this year about an increase of the trailer market in North America of 5.1%. And now, as you can see here, we're talking about 51% higher than last year. So that is quite a big difference between the original forecast for the North American trailer market and comparing with the actual numbers. I heard, or we heard in the meantime, from some trailer OEMs who stopped selling. They stopped their sales activities for 2019 because they are already booked out for the entire year. And due to the fact that nobody knows what about pricing and costs and pricing for 2020, they stopped selling and they stopped taking new orders. So that means something. Okay. How much air, how much hot air, how much bubbles are in this order intake, we don't know. We don't think that's a lot. We believe, and that's what we hear across the board, these are solid orders and the fleet needs these trailers. Same situation of the truck market, and with this I would like to turn your attention to page number 5 of our today's presentation. Also here, the order intake for all months this year much higher than the previous year and also much higher than 2016 in units. And you can see the numbers by yourself. In the first 9 months of this year, the Class 8 net orders, and that's the market where we are mainly in, the heavy-duty trucks, soared by 140%. And just as a reminder, I just talked on the trailer side about 133, so pretty much the same pace on the truck side. And also here, as a reminder, ACT said this earlier this year, end of last year, for 2018, the order intake for Class 8 will grow by 26.6%, and now we are about 140. So, also quite a big difference. Why is all that? We put some facts behind that. First of all, is the electronic locking device, the so-called ELD, which is now mandatory for all trucks from April on. There's the booming economy. They call it the Amazon effect. We have a high increase of ton mileage, and the freight rates are higher and higher. That means the fleets make money, are able to make money, and we still have moderate fuel costs. Order backlogs on the truck side are 6 to 7 months, and what we heard recently from all of the truck OEMs in North America, they are asking for next year about a 10 to 15% higher capacity, which they would like to see from us and ask if we're able to do that, and we will be able to do that. So all in all, North America, very strong, continues to be strong, and also for next year, the outlook is more than positive. Coming to Europe, our most important market in terms of the trailer side, here today on page number 6, you see the truck world. Just to remind everybody, only 3.5 to 4% of our total sales of the SAF Holland Group are somehow linked with the European truck market. So it's not so important for us, but anyhow, it's a good indicator. And as you can see, in September, for example, that's the registration, not order intake now. The new registrations for heavy commercial vehicle trucks above 16 tons increased by 1.7%. And in the first 9 months of this year, the European truck market expanded by 7.3%. And also here, to look back, the forecast for this year was 4.3%. So it's almost double than forecasted. Very solid, very strong. And on the trailer side, just do it verbally, we see still, also after the IAA, which took place in September, late September this year in Hanover, the trailer OEMs are well loaded with orders. It's even for the big ones who normally supply trailers in maximum 4 weeks, some of them already in 2 weeks, now they have an order backlog of 3 to 4 months. So very solid, and we see no decrease so far on the European trailer side. So that means the outlook for next year is also positive. Yeah, that's about the markets, the most important markets for us, America and Europe. Let's come to our numbers on page number 7, talking about our group sales and the adjusted EBIT by quarter. As you can see on the left-hand side of this slide, if you compare the Q3 this year with 340 million, and as I already said, the highest sales ever in the SAF Holland Group, compared with Q3 2017 with 277. And if you go back to 2016, just for a second, you see the 255.8. So that means for the third year now in a row, very nice increase on the top line. On the adjusted EBIT, on the right-hand side of this slide, we see the 8%, the orange bar, or 27.1 million in absolute numbers. And also, if you deduct the 4.4 extra, as an extraordinary booking this year, and we talked about that, then still we are above, in absolute terms, above Q3 2017, which is a good thing to have. On the next page, page 8, you see the share of our group sales by sales channel and by region in Q3 this year. On the left-hand side, you see almost 76% of our total business was related to original equipment manufacturers, and roughly one quarter, 24.1, related to the aftermarket. Very stable, and as you know, our target is 25%, and we are there. Of course, OEM markets are very bullish, as you have seen earlier, and therefore the aftermarket suffered a little bit, especially in North America. We cannot fulfill all orders because the demand from OEs is so high, but it's still, and that is mainly due to the very good development in Europe, our overall aftermarket share is very stable with around 25%. On the right-hand side, you see quite a big difference now in the share by region. The Europe piece is 45%. It was 52%. The North American or the American piece was almost 40%. Now we are at 38%. And this is now the big difference, the rest of world, and that is mainly APEC and China, now contributes with 16.4% of our total sales, which is double percentage-wise than previous year, and that is exactly according to our strategy 2020. We are on a very good way to achieve our target to grow our sales outside the today core markets EMEA and America, in the rest of the world. And this mainly contributed to the acquisition of York, but also to the very nice sales development in China and APEC overall. But I come to that later more in details. Before I do that, I would like to hand over to Matthias to talk about more in detail about the development of our sales.
Yes, thank you, Detlef. Good morning also from my side to everyone. When looking at the development of sales in a little bit more detail on the next two slides, let's start with the usual breakup by looking at the 22.9% non-organic, which took us to the 340.6 million in the third quarter, and break it up in the individual growth components. Well, if we take out the negative translational effects of 3.7 million or 1.x%, have the M&A contributions, I'll comment on that in more detail in just a second, with a little bit more than 9% or 25.6 million. We are left with the organic growth of 41.7 million or 15%. Looking at the M&A side, I think it is worth giving you, at least for the moment, because we agreed that this would be helpful for you to help you on your way in the modeling process. The 25.6 are made up of around 20 million coming from York, a little bit above 5 million from Orlandi, and 200K from the recently acquired Accent in the UK. With that said, please be reminded of a comment that I made in our Q2 call, where I emphasized the point that it is difficult to linearize the run rates for these businesses. If you take, for example, the Orlandi piece with 5.3 million in the third quarter, you divide that by three, that gives you a different run rate than what we had upon its first inclusion. I believe this is important to understand because a little similar to what we sometimes see in our business, in this case, a large customer had summer vacation, didn't call off product, didn't order, so less revenue was booked. This has nothing to do with a slowdown in activity. It's a usual seasonal pattern. Turning the page to page number 10, I would like to build on Detlef's comments, because when we look about the above-plan organic sales growth in all regions, this is important to emphasize that this is paving the way for value realization in the aftermarket in subsequent periods. This is obviously where we capture the value. This is where we made a conscious decision to serve our OE customers to support future aftermarket sales. And of course, this is a confirmation of the strength of our product portfolio and our market positioning or go-to-market strategy. When we look at it in a little bit more detail, we see that EMEA continues to grow above the market research forecast. In Q3, there was a growth of 4.1%. We see a continued very strong growth while we fix the challenges in North America. Here it is the entire Americas at 18.6. Now, when this grows on the OE side, it is also a partial explanation for the margin contribution, and then APEC China at a strong 66.2% against a strong prior year comparable. One last aspect I would like to briefly point out for those of you who noticed the asterisk next to the EMEA number and the APEC China number, you find a footnote explanation for that. Because we did reallocate India from EMEA, which used to be called EMEAI for India, over to the APEC China segment. And while these numbers are small, for the sake of full disclosure, this needs to be pointed out, because if you put the preliminary disclosures next to this, you will find a small difference. With that, Detlef will start on the regions, and I'll be back in a few minutes.
Yeah, we'll be back after two slides, right?
Yeah.
So, next two slides are on me. I would like to talk about segment Americas. I'm on page 11 of our today's presentation. Talking about sales first, and as you can see on the right-hand side, there are some explanations, but I would like to give some more light than just what we say here in writing. We see still a very strong customer demand on all businesses, doesn't matter if it is truck, trailer, or aftermarket, as I explained earlier today. The issue is that the complete supply chain is very much under stress. That means already, although that we are now in the fourth quarter, it means for a year, seeing this very fast-growing development, the supply chain was and is not able to fill up the orders. That means everybody has the same issues in North America. That starts with capacity is not enough. The installed capacity is not enough. Doesn't matter from what you're talking about. First. Second, we are all faced with a very tight labor market. That means the availability of blue-collar workers is limited, in some regions extremely limited. We know from suppliers, but also from customers, some of them would like to start a third shift or working on the weekends or whatever. They simply cannot do it because they don't get people. And the third point is the high turnover rate, which is, of course, needs to be seen with the tight labor market. It means you get new people on board, you train them on the equipment, on the machinery, on the processes, and then after 3 weeks, 4 weeks, or 2 months, they leave and go to the next company. So all this means the supply chain is under stress, so we are, and that means everybody is, how to say, turning a big wheel, but to make money with that under these circumstances is difficult. But again, everybody is faced with that. We are part of it, and we try to do our best, although to increase sales and also to increase profitability. On the first point, increase sales, as you can see on the left-hand side, that worked very well. We increased sales from 110 million euros in Q3 2017 to 129 million euros. That means the sales came in with 18.6% higher, which is well above about our expectations. We had some negative exchange rate effects of minus 1.3%. And if you go to the summary, then the sales we can report was up 17.3%, which is also, just to mention that, 6 million euros above Q2 2018. On the profitability side, coming to the adjusted EBIT, which came in with 6.7 million euros, previous year was 5 million, but this is including the contribution of our partial settlement of the US medical plan of 4.4 million, which bring us annual cost savings of roughly 400,000 euros every year. The clean adjusted EBIT margin, as we call it now, versus Q2 was now 1.6% compared with the 0.7 in Q2. So you see an improvement also on the EBIT side. We had some additional operating expenses of 2 million and compared with Q2 that was 2.3. So also here we see step by step a reduction. Steel price, and I will talk on that on the next page more in detail, burdened us with 3.9 million. So it comes down now because in Q2 it was 4.3 million as the quarterly average steel price index remained at a very high level. Having said that, I would like to turn your attention on the next page, which is page number 12, talking a little bit more in detail about the steel price development in North America, which is globally seen really something very special. We see in other regions like Europe and China also steel price are rising, but not to that high extent as in North America. Has to do with the tariff situation, of course, has to do with the North American steel companies raising their prices to an extreme high level, as we can see it. But anyhow, we are part of this game, and we need to play that. As you can see on this graph here, And here we show the hot rolled coal price index from 2016 to actual numbers. You see a low in late 2016 and an all-time high in the second quarter this year with almost $940 per ton. So, but from then on, the price or this price declined. We also expect for the remainder of the year a declining steel price also for next year. That means for us, and most of you know that, contractually given with the most of our customers, with all big key accounts, in the contracts we are able to pass on price differences on the steel. That means it goes in both directions, and now, that means from now on, if the steel price continues to go down, we will see a positive trend in our profitability because we will be able and we are able to pass on these high steel prices in the future. So let's hope that the steel price will still decline in North America also in 2019, and then we will see the positive effects on our P&L. Yeah, with that, I would like to talk. Would like to hand over to Matthias because P&L is probably the right word to give it over. Yeah.
Yeah. Happy to
hand it over. Yeah.
And I'm starting with page 13, which is the continuation of our regular visualization of the adjusted EBIT situation in the Americas region. Detlef touched on this when he discussed the commentary on page 11, but maybe from my perspective, I will use this slide to explain one more time the introduction of the clean adjusted EBIT measure, which I understand is yet another performance measure, but we decided to do so for the sake of full disclosure and transparency and to enable the financial analysis, because we did have the extraordinary income from the settlement of a supplement of the overall medical plan in the United States, which is why we refer to it as a partial settlement. We did not terminate all of the medical plan for our employees, and that gave us $4.4 million on the P&L. We considered that to be part of our adjusted EBIT after careful internal consideration and discussions with our auditors, given our definition of the adjusted EBIT, number one, but also number two, given the reason that the accruals had been recorded as part of the personnel expenses in prior periods, so the release was taken as a credit to personnel expenses in the region. You see both numbers side by side. Last comment on this topic is that the adjusted EBIT that does include the $4.4 million extraordinary gain, i.e. the $6.5 million, would give us an adjusted EBIT margin of 5% for the region. I think I can skip the burdening effects on this slide because Detlef already covered this on page 11. If we turn over to page 14, then we can leverage what I just said around the clean adjusted EBIT margin, which is the axis on the very right-hand side, which explains why the margin successively goes from 0.6 to 1.6% and doesn't jump to the 5% that I just explained. Yet you see that the strategy of successive improvements quarter over quarter is in place and is working out. We continue to work on this very hard, but have returned to profitability ever since the low point at the end of last year. And the fact that that plays a role further down the P&L as well, I will comment on later, because now I pass it back to Detlef for some comments on EMEA.
Yeah, coming to the very good news in Q3, this is EMEA and also APEC China, which will come next. So the next two slides are my favorite ones for sure. So starting with EMEA, and you might see now that, as Matthias already said, E is not part of EMEA E anymore, because E, that means India, is part of our reporting for the APEC region. But EMEA is still very strong, both on the sales side, but also on the profitability side. In Q3 this year, our sales grew by 8%, to 155.55 million. Previous year was 144, which is a very nice increase. Of course, our two latest acquisitions, Orlandi and Accent, are part of that. If you deduct that, then on an organic basis and adjusted also for Forex, sales were up 4% year over year, which is also a very nice development based on the trailer and truck market in Europe, which is growing as well, but not that high. Aftermarket grow even higher, 6.3% from already high basis, which is very important for us because, as everybody knows, in the aftermarket, the profitability is much higher than on the OE side. And therefore, if we are able to grow the aftermarket more and faster than the OE business, that kicks in on the EBIT line, gross profit and EBIT line. And that's what you can see here on the slide further below. In Q3, our adjusted EBIT rose 20.7% to 17.5 million absolute numbers, or in percentage 11.3. This is based on this positive mix effects, as I said, high aftermarket contribution, but also here we harvest now clearly the results of the plant consolidation we did in 2015 and 16 in Europe, and now with the factories being consolidated, we see the effects now on an operational level. So this means for Europe, everything is on green. And also, just as a side comment, I talked about it already last time when we did the preliminary numbers, some results from the latest IAA, the biggest commercial vehicle show in the world, which took place in Hanover end of September. We presented ourselves there, I would say, in a very positive way. And some of you have visited us. Thanks for coming. And the comments we got also after the IAA have been all positive. So that means the product mix we have shown, it means the traditional products, but with a lot of improvements, but also all the new products, talking about digital, automatic coupling, e-driven axles, all this new portfolio, I believe that was well received by customers, and the feedback and the discussions we have since the IAA are enormous, and that's not only Europe, that's also globally. So that was a very good show, and that shows also that EMEA is in a very good shape, and also, as I said already, for next year, the outlook is positive. Coming to APAC China, on page number 16 of our presentation, as you can see on the headline, the highest percentage organic sales growth within the group. So that means the internal race is on, who will grow as fastest, and it looks like that APAC China will make it. You can see in Q3 2017, we did 23.2 million. So compared with other regions, still a small number, but now with our acquisition of York in India, the market leader in India for trailer axles and suspensions, now we can report a sales of 56.1 million euro, and York alone contributed close to 20 million in this third quarter this year to our sales. And if you look to organic sales growth, we have seen, and Matthias talked about it already, a very strong 66.2% increase. So we are growing extremely fast in China and now in Asia Pacific as well. And this is based on, of course, in China, the new regulations for heavy commercial vehicles. We talked about that many times already in the previous calls. And this is still going on. The demand is there for premium products. It means trailer axles with air suspensions, trailer axles with air disc brakes, customers looking for weight reduction, total cost of ownership, and of course, we look to reliable products. And that's where we are very strong at, especially in Europe, as being one of the market leaders for this product here in this region, but also in America, where we are number two. So that kicks in also in China now that our customers see this company as a follow-on is very well placed in this segment, and they would like to buy from us. That means our production in Xiamen, which is our biggest facility right now in China, is fully loaded. We work there almost 7 days a week, three shifts. We are absolutely at the limit of our capacity. We are also now using the new facility, which we got, let's say, on top with the acquisition from York, with their headquarter in Singapore, but the main facility in Pune, India, but also with some operation in China, in Qingdao, which is in the north of China, and we are going to utilize this plant now as well, more and more, to get some relief for Xiamen, but we are at our capacity limits. And that is one of the main reasons why we are building a new facility right now in Yangzhou. The roof ceremony is this Friday, right? Or next Friday?
No, it is actually this Friday.
This Friday. So it's tomorrow. Yeah. So we are absolutely on track with this new building, which will be a 46,000 square meter building, our biggest facility globally. And we are really on track with building this facility, and it will kick in from Q2 next year as well, because we need more capacity. On the profitability side in APEC China, as you can see, lower on a little bit lower on this page, adjusted EBIT came in with 3.1 million compared with 1.4 previous year, percentage-wise 5.5. That was expected because so far the York sales is, in terms of profitability, lower than the group, as average group margin, but we definitely have the target to bring York also to the average of the overall group margin in the time to come. And last bullet point, I also always try to explain that all this business in China and the main business in India so far is without aftermarket. So that is OE business only, and that means having with this, with a very low contribution of the aftermarket so far, but this is to come to achieve a 5-6% EBIT margin, is a good result. Matthias, I believe next pages are on you.
Yes, next pages are on me because I owe you the full P&L discussion as well as the net working capital. So let's go through this beginning on page 17 with the gross profit situation, which at the end of Q3 stood at 50.8 million, giving us a gross profit margin of 14.9% compared to a previous year figure of 16.8%. This, of course, as shown in the middle of the slide, is still impacted by those burdening factors we have discussed again during this call, namely additional operating expenses of 2 million, effects from the US steel price of 3.9 million, and restructuring costs on group level of 0.6 million. Only a small portion of which actually comes from the U.S. If we back that out, we would actually have an adjusted gross profit margin of 16.8%. If you look on the right-hand side, allow me a couple quick comments this time. That's the qualitative analysis with the pluses and minuses that I'm referring to, just as a reminder. Of course, the temporary workforce is still in place here and there, supporting with the volume challenges, but also trying to bridge some of the inefficiencies that we still have and are getting rid of. On the volume side, of course, running plants above 100% utilization for longer than a short period of time is not healthy, which is why you have a minus versus the plus, because the plus, of course, it's positive on the additional sales side. But we did make a conscious decision this year to focus on the OE side and meet customer demand, which explains that. And then on the product mix, of course, what you saw on previous slides, the clear customer focus in OE also comes with a different margin profile. Those comments just as quick reminders, because we can already turn the page over to the reconciliation of reported EBIT, now all the way to the clean EBIT, given what I discussed earlier around the treatment and reporting around the extraordinary income. Here I would just like to make one additional comment around the depreciation and amortization from PPA, which stood at 2.6 at the end of Q2, now stands at 2.8. And should come down to a more normal run rate somewhere around 2 million, 2.x million next year. Here we have some inventory step-ups that need to be accounted for that have a temporary impact. Moving to page 19, because we now need to move from the earnings before interest and taxes to net income. Here we have a very positive result that Detlef already mentioned on his first slide, with the net income doubling to 15.3 million in total. This is mainly driven after the EBIT portion by the bond repayment that we had at the end of April, giving us a much improved finance result on the one hand, but then a lower tax rate of 25.5% compared to a previous year rate of 30.2%, which also had a significant impact on net income. Quick comment on the tax side, where does this come from? I would want to limit my explanations to two major factors, one of which being that the return to profitability in the U.S. Obviously allows us to benefit from the new tax regime, namely the lower corporate income tax on the one hand, and the other hand is really literally a mixed bag of tax effects, starting with where we had profits around the globe under which tax regime, but it is a mixed bag of technical effects that has helped us. In terms of the tax rate to be expected going forward, this is more likely to be in the range of 26 to 28% maybe, rather than below 26%. If we take into account on page 20, which is the next page, that the number of shares outstanding has remained unchanged at 45.4 million, this much improved net income translates directly into much improved EPS numbers. You can see a 34 euro cent per share on the basic earnings per share, and then on the adjusted side, the 39 euro cent per share compared to 25 from the previous year. On page 21, you find a summary of what I just covered quickly, namely the changes year over year on those financial key figures, either in relative terms, how they changed, or in absolute terms, where we found that to be more helpful. With that, we can already come to page 22, inventories and net working capital. And while there is a lot of text following our usual coverage or color that we give to this topic on the right-hand side, I would like to tackle this a little differently and focus more, because at this point in time I feel this could also be of interest to the audience, focus more on the comparison Q3 versus Q2, because you obviously want to know how we treat this topic, how it is developing, what we're doing on the management side. And here we can summarize as follows. Because despite the renewed acceleration in organic sales growth that we explained in a lot of detail, our inventories at the end of Q3, and this is shown in the graph in the upper left, were 0.4 million below the end of Q2. So the organic growth did not contribute to yet another increase in absolute inventories. At 207 million, if I now go into a little bit more detail on the net working capital side, our trade receivables were virtually unchanged compared to their level as of June 30th. So what I just said on the inventory side equally applies on the receivable side, which means that we put a lot of effort on the collection side to make sure that the money is due also come in. On the trade payable side, they fell at the same time, and this is an important impact, of course, that impairs the view a little bit, in as much as they fell by 15.9 million, leading us to a net working capital increase quarter over quarter by 13.5 million from 204.4 to 217.9, which you see in the lower right in total. Two additional comments. The first one being on the trade receivable side, here we need to take into account the regional mix. This is also part of the verbiage in the lower right, because we currently see a particular strong growth in those regions that come with longer payment terms, China at the forefront of that. And on the trade payable side, this was not an operational hiccup of any kind, but a conscious decision that we made on the management side to support our suppliers and safeguard our supply chain and production, which has led us to paying suppliers and thus the decrease on the trade payable side. Obviously, an increase would have been more helpful statistically on the net working capital calculation, but here we made a business decision for the reasons that Detlef commented on the distressed supply chain, to give you just one example, but also to safeguard our organic growth. If we now turn it over to page 23, we see that the free cash flow was still negative in the third quarter. If you tie up an increasing amount in net working capital, that obviously doesn't translate into free cash flow immediately. Yet we saw an improvement quarter over quarter from Q2 to Q3, which is positive, and we expect to achieve a significant improvement in free cash flow by the end of the year as a result of our continued focus and the usual positive seasonal effects in the fourth quarter. Just one technical comment for those of you who stumble across this. Every now and then we do get a question on this. Please be reminded that the FX translation applied to the balance sheet is a different one than the one applied to the cash flow statement, which is why amounts can differ technically. If we turn the page to page 24 and have a look at net debt and equity, although the picture on the left shows a comparison to December 31, this is what we showed last time, how that has evolved over the year. I would like to focus on the immediate increase because that ties in nicely with the next page as well, quarter over quarter, which was an increase of 16.6 million, so from the region of 252 to 268 or 268.6 at the end of Q3. This is mainly due to the payment, so a cash outflow of the purchase price for Accent, and I will comment on an additional component on the next slide, and the increase in net working capital on the one hand. If we look at the equity ratio, as healthy at 31.5%. This is due to the fact that total assets are almost unchanged compared to year-end, if we take the 30.2% as a comparable, and given the increase in net income and thus a strengthening of equity, absolute equity has increased by 13.5 million and the ratio to 31.5%. Then if we break that up or return rather first to net debt on page 25 and break that up in a bit more detail, we see the contribution of the negative free cash flow on the one hand. I owe you one comment because I alluded to it on the M&A side because it was not only Accent. If you refer to the announcement that we made, we said that we paid single mid-digit euro amount for this acquisition, so there is about 3 million euro missing on the cash outflow side. That was a subsequent net working capital adjustment that we paid on the York acquisition. That had been agreed in the original SPA. Here we had an agreement that was favorable for us, at least that's how I perceive it. Although we paid out additional funds, this was tied to a net working capital level, which had the seller involved in taking additional efforts to clean up net working capital so that we wouldn't be left with it. So that is the remainder of the portion there on the 8 million. And with that, we have run through the P&L, covered parts of the balance sheet, and I hand it back to Detlef to take it home.
Matthias, thanks for your detailed explanation. Last slide for today, I'm on page 26. We, on the headline, talking about that first, the financial targets for 2018, which we refined on October 19th. I would like to talk about that for a minute. So starting with the sales side, for the financial year 2018, we said earlier this year, we see an organic increase of 5 to 7% and a contribution from the two acquisitions from Orlandi and York of roughly 60 million euros. So what we refined on October 19 and going to confirm here today is that organic sales will increase now to 9 to 10%, taking into consideration all the explanation we did earlier today. And the two acquisitions, Orlandi, York, and now also Accent in the UK, we see coming in with 65 to 70 million euros, so much higher than expected. All these acquisitions are doing very favorable for us, doing a very good job, so therefore we see a higher sales contribution as all earlier expected. On the adjusted EBIT margin side, we said earlier 7 to 8% for the financial year 2018, and we refined that now to the lower end of 7 to 8% range, including the extraordinary income of 4.4 million euros, as we explained also earlier. For the net working capital, the 12% target is, of course, a challenge. Right now we are at 16%, as Matthias explained, and CapEx will be at 38 to 40 million. On the long run, the strategy 2020, also we are going to confirm that as well. We absolutely see that we can achieve these numbers organically to grow our business to 1.2.5 million. In total, company will be at the end of 2020 at 1.5 billion. The adjusted EBIT margin 8% or higher, 12% net working capital, and also on the CapEx roughly 2.5% of sales, which then leads to 26 to 28 million. Yeah, with that, we are at the end of today's presentation. And I would like to hand back to Stefan.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, the question is now open for your questions. Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9-star on your telephone keypad. In case you wish to cancel your question, press 9-star again. Please press 9-star now to state your questions. And the first question comes from Philippe Laurent from Berenberg. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Philippe Laurent from Berenberg. A couple of questions from my side. I mean, one on the slide 17 is basically, it seems like the exchange rate has a negative impact on the gross margin, at least as it is presented on that slide. But if I recall correctly, your business is actually pretty well naturally hedged. So is this actually a negative impact from FX on the margin or on the gross profit that we see here?
I would... You find three people thinking around the phone, Philippe. Good question to the audience. I would say it's more on the gross margin.
Yeah. More on the gross margin. Okay, good. So I will need probably to come back to you on that to clarify. And other way, I catch up as well the comment on the higher turnover rate on the back of a tight labor market, and that was made during the presentation on the slide for the America segment. I was just wondering if it's also the case in Germany, if you do observe something like that, that actually people come to you and tend to change after a few months, or if it's just related to North America.
Yeah, that is definitely not Germany. Our workforce here in Germany is very stable. Our turnover rate is a very, very low single-digit number. It's almost nothing, so it's very stable. And also, if we need additional people because we add shift or whatever, we get the people, we are able to get them. It's not that easy than in the past, but that is not a big issue. So I'm quite pleased with that, how we organize that and how we manage that. On the Americas and China, that's different. I just talked about America before, okay, because this is the biggest issue. The turnover rate, which is high, We are talking about something around 30 up to 35% turnover rate. I heard from customers, for example, they're talking about a turnover rate of 20% per month. Okay, so imagine that. But also in China, this is still a challenge. There is a high turnover rate. If not that problematic than before, because we are running now full, as I said, under full steam, and the workers love that, to do extra time, to get extra money for that. But US is the big issue. Germany, no issue at all.
Okay, great. And otherwise, a quick one actually on the market. I mean, you speak at the beginning of the presentation about the outlook being very strong for the market heading into 2019, but I guess you mean probably in terms of production rates, perhaps more than in terms of orders, because I guess the order situation is pretty difficult to really forecast.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We are talking about production. You know, at the end, we live from orders for production. We don't live from order intake from somebody on the customer side, because especially in the third quarter of a year, especially in North America, the big fleets tend to place their big orders for the following year. Okay, we don't see that. Okay, we get the orders just in front of we need to deliver. Okay, that means our order intake is different to what we reported here, but that is okay. We can only follow the order intake from the OEMs.
Okay, great. And just to bounce back on that, actually, trend in Class 8, because some people were mentioning as well that cancellation was spiking, and actually it seems like really the cancellations are spiking, yet we have very strong net orders, and these net orders of course also in my view reflect these cancellation levels. So how is your view on that? Because the argument or the bear argument we hear in the market is because the cancellation rates are spiking, that's a sign that the cycle might be turning, let's say, in the next couple of months or whatever. I do understand, or I do see that the other way around, that if the net orders are still very high despite high cancellation levels, that's, that the demand, the underlying demand is pretty strong still. So we're just coming to the experts here to ask for your point of view here.
Yeah, I would share your opinion on that. And only I can talk about what I heard personally, okay, and talks to customers in the last couple of weeks, and I spent a significant time, amount of time in North America with customers in the last 4 weeks. And so, yes, there are some cancellations, but nothing unexpected high. This is a normal due to course of business. Overall, the order intake and the capacity utilization of the plants is extremely stable. And even though some people might cancel some orders, we don't see, and our customers don't see this as an issue. The net orders are strong.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, great. And the last point is really because I did not catch correctly the explanation of Matthias on the payables situation. I did understand that there is a stabilization really in the inventory, because we can see that wonderfully from the chart page 22 on a sequential basis, although the there was some organic growth in the business still. And then I missed a bit the explanation around the payables versus...
Philippe, you were breaking up in your last part of the question, but I took it that you asked for me to explain one more time what I meant in my quick comment on accounts payable, and I'll just take it from there. Of course, one measure on net working capital management is to tie cash to the business in as much as you pay your suppliers as late as you can by extending the DPO, for example. As a side remark, of course, the alternative is to go for an early payment discount where this is applicable, which we also do to support the P&L. But on the accounts payable, what we did this time, rather than extending the DPO across quarter end and really squeezing our suppliers to wait for their cash, we particularly paid certain suppliers to make sure the material reaches us on time and that they keep delivering. And so the money left the business. Now, if you look at the fourth quarter, where obviously seasonality is different and so on, you can stretch this across year-end, and then you have the opposite impact, which is positive because obviously a higher amount of trade payables works mathematically as a reduction in net working capital. I hope that was a little clearer. If not, please ask again.
Yeah, no, I get that, and I get as well that probably in quarter four, of course, you tend to accelerate the receivable collection anyway. So on the one hand, you've got the receivable reduction, and on the other hand, the payable extension, so it makes sense for me.
That is our usual approach and pattern, and that is obviously what the team is already now instructed to push for.
Yeah, okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Frederik Bitter from Hauck & Aufhäuser. Please go ahead with your question.
Oh, thank you very much. Hello. I would like to ask two questions, please, on the Americas and one on net working capital, following up on Philippe's question earlier. On the Americas, what's your guidance for extra cost in Q4 and also if you look on a quarterly basis in 2019?
Do we give a guidance?
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, Frederik. we just need to choose our words carefully in how much we give a guidance. I would try and stick my head out as follows. It's too early to sort of round up Q4 already today in the early November days. But of course, if we stick to the strategy of the successive improvements quarter over quarter in terms of how are you modeling? Forgive me if I don't go to a precise number on the add-on operating costs, but I would want to leave it by saying that you should see an additional reduction and thus a successive improvement, because that is what we have everybody working on. I know this was more a qualitative answer, maybe one that you expected, but hopefully it is helpful anyway.
No, it is. Thank you very much. The next one I had on the Americas is just if you could share some thoughts on your existing capacity in light of, as you said earlier, OEMs demanding a 10-15% increase in production in 2019?
Yeah, that is mainly the 10-15% I mentioned. That's regarding trucks, okay? And that's what we heard also during my trips the last couple of weeks. In our main facility, which is in Wylie, Texas, where we do fist wheels, we have last month reached the highest output ever, which is really a great achievement. We installed new equipment there, new CNC machinery, etc. Very nice investments, which helps to increase capacity even further. This new equipment is not running now, let's say, so far at 100% level. They are still going to improve the utilization of this new machine, this new equipment. So we see, in a nutshell, to summarize it, we see furthermore, efficiency improvements to come also in the next year, in the next quarters, and that will lead to higher capacity. And we believe, not we believe, I'm sure, that we can fulfill the additional demands of the trailer OEMs, from the trailer OEMs also next year. It's a stretch, no problem, no question, and I don't say it's not a problem, but we are getting better and better, and so therefore on the truck side, we can fulfill this demand. On the trailer side, just to cover that as well, because I didn't mention that, we will add a new welding line for the trailer axle production in the Warrington, which is in Missouri, so to get more capacity, which is absolutely needed as well, because also in Warrington, we are running under the more than 100% utilization, which is not healthy at all, and Matthias talked about that. But also here, new equipment is ordered, will be installed in the first quarter next year, so we will have more capacity available there as well. The issue here, and please allow me that comment, the biggest issue is, again, the very tight labor market. I talked about that, but on top, and I didn't mention that so far, on top is the long, long lead times for new equipment. If you need a new welding line, a new robot, whatever it is, a CNC machine, whatever it is, lead times are 9 to 12 months now for some special equipment, and we need a lot of special equipment, it's 1 to 1.5 years. So that means even though you have the CapEx available, if you have the plan in place, if you order the new machinery, the new equipment, it takes a long time to get it. So, but anyhow, to answer your question, in one sentence, we will be able to meet this additional capacity questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Could you just, if I may, as a follow-up, could you just share what kind of sales level in the Americas could you reach with the new setup at peak capacity?
I will not answer that question, but it's a very good question. Give us some time, because we will, earlier next year, we will give you the guidance for 2019. We are right now, next week, to be very precise, next week is our budget week, our famous internal budget week. That means we spend an entire week on budgeting. All the subsidiaries, all the plants, all the regions will present their individual budgets and to the management team, and then we will talk and fight and discuss. And then at the end of next week, we will know what is our budget for next year. Then we will talk with our board of directors to get an approval on that as well, and that is planned for the first week of December. And then in January we know what we are going to do, what we are able to do with the existing capacity, giving the order intake, which we know then in December, and then we have a much better picture about 2019 and what to expect.
Okay, fair enough. Then ask again a few weeks time. Thank you. And then the last one I had, as I said earlier, following up from Philippe's question on net working capital, what is your expectation in terms of absolute value, absolute level in Q4?
When you mean
rough idea.
Yeah, Frederick, when you say absolute level, I take it you still are fishing for a percentage, right?
No, I mean a million euro amount would be enough for me.
that's a good question. Let me tackle this differently. And I'm not, again, you know, you never find me trying to avoid a question. The goal to bring this down significantly is still there, and we have the organization still shooting towards the relative ratio of 12%. We feel there is a path. If you consider what I discussed earlier around accounts payable, if you swing that in the other direction, those 15.9 million, that has a severe implication on net working capital and the cash flow. And then we will need to keep working, by the way, Detlef and I are monitoring this personally, on cash collection. So you should come down considerably, probably somewhere around 12%. If we don't hit it, we will hopefully have a 12 in front of the comma. Sorry if that is not precise enough, but given that organic growth is still high, we also need to take that into account. I think we showed in Q3 that we can move this in the right direction. We're absolutely committed to continue to do that. But it's a little bit of a strange year somehow. So bear with me, and I will be held accountable for this when I present final numbers.
Okay, thank you very much. No, I understand. Obviously, there are many moving parts, and I understand your focus on organic growth and keeping your market share, etc. That's all well understood. And thanks very much for explanations for both of you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And there's one follow-up question from Philippe Laurent from Berenberg. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, thanks for taking the follow-up. I mean, we are speaking a lot about markets, supply chains, being tight and so on. And if I recall correctly, in the past peak, like 2006, 2007, demand was so strong, we needed to actually weld some actions by hand. I hope that's not the case anymore here.
Could you, Philip, you just broke up again. Could you repeat your question, please?
Sorry, I was just saying that if I recall correctly, in the past peak of 2006-7, demand was so strong that you had to weld some axes by hand in the business. I was just wondering if you still see that kind of threat right now because demand is heating up that much.
We don't weld axes by hand anymore, but first of all, you never know, okay, but I would say our forecast is good enough. Our product planning is good enough. We know what we do. We know what we can do. And there's one thing where we're 100% committed to, this is quality. That means if you do something, for example, take this as an example, welding something by hand, then the quality is at risk, okay? We will not do that, okay? That means we are now in a situation, for example, in U.S., all the truck OEMs are on allocation, okay? The trailer guys as well. That means, and every supplier is doing that. That means we tell, unfortunately, we have to tell our customers what they get from us, okay? And we have limits. These limits are, of course, driven by our existing capacity, but we will not do any compromise on quality and doing some crazy things just to get this stuff out and to serve the OEMs. Then we have to say them, and we will tell them, sorry, you only will get this and this number of whatever it is, fixed-width kickpins, landing gears or axles, and that's it. That is not a good situation, absolutely not. As I said, we are really committed to fulfill the demand of our customers, but only to a certain extent.
Okay, no, that sounds great because I remember that time when you had to book some provisions due to these, these quality issues. Not the case anymore. Great to hear.
Yeah. We learned our lesson, okay?
Very good. Thanks, you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Aaron, there is one more question from Alexander Wahl from MainFirst. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, hi. It's just a follow-up question on Frederick's question regarding capacity in the U.S. I don't know whether you have an insight here, but could you just shed some light on whether you see your suppliers also expand capacity sufficiently so that you will be able to cover the 10 to 15% higher production in 2019 without significant expedited freight costs?
Yeah. Most of our suppliers are hesitant to increase capacity. Okay. Also, most of them learned their lesson out of 2008, 2009. And so the only way is to find additional suppliers. That's what we're doing. Luckily, we have a global network because we are one of the very few companies in this business who are globally active. And also now, for example, with the new acquisition in India, we found new suppliers, new sources. To force existing suppliers to increase capacity is, we are doing that. They do it up to a certain extent, but this is pretty limited. But especially on the fixed-width side, as we mentioned before, the 10 to 15%, we have a very good partner here, or partners, let me say that, and they will be, we checked that already, they will be able to do that.
Okay, and just a follow-up question on that. If you add new suppliers to your network, how do you experience with that regarding regarding efficiency of those suppliers and how that affects your own production then?
Yeah, that depends on your selection process. Okay, if you don't do it carefully, if you don't look really behind the scenes, then you have issues, of course. Then you have quality issues, you have on-time delivery issues, et cetera, et cetera. But before we really accept the new supplier, he needs to run to several processes. Okay, we have a very stringent process in-house with supplier checks, et cetera. So it takes time to find a new supplier and to bring him on board. Sometimes for specific components, which are complicated components, it could take up to 2 years. Okay, but for commodities, it's not so difficult. It's probably let me say, something between 3 and 6 months. But again, we spend a lot of time and a lot of resources to find the right suppliers and not to run into any issues just because we need more capacity and then doing some stupid things on the, as I said, quality side or whatever. So it's not so easy, and also the number of suppliers for some components is limited, but as I said, due to our global footprint, we are able to do that.
Okay, very helpful. Thank you.
Welcome.
There are no further questions.
So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining the conference call, also over lunchtime, and we see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Appreciate. Bye-bye.
It.